Gordon Peary is an esteemed and visible member of our community. He's played piano for contra dances since the late 1970s. He's toured throughout the United States and Europe, and has played with Skip Gorman in the Shetland Islands and Cape Breton. Gordon was the narrator for the Lyceum program a couple of years back, a celebration of New England contra dance music honoring Bob McQuillan. He's the president of the Mannix Center for History and Culture, which earlier this year featured an exhibit on traditional dance in the Monadnock region, 1750 to today. Gordon lives in Nelson, New Hampshire, where he can frequently be heard at the piano playing for the Nelson Monday Night Dance. We also have Skip Gorman with us today. He performs an impressive variety of traditional American and Celtic folk music as an accomplished singer, guitarist, fiddler, and mandolinist. Gorman's award-winning recordings have been featured by filmmaker Ken Burns on four of his celebrated documentaries. Skip has appeared on A Prairie Home Companion, toured with the U.S. Embassy in Chile, Argentina, and Paraguay, and taught at numerous music camps in America and the British Isles. In 2015, Skip received a Best of New Hampshire Award from New Hampshire Magazine. Now for some of his background, a little further back. On his eighth birthday, Skip... On his eighth birthday, Skip received a copy of The Train Whistle Blues by Jimmy Rogers, the yodeling Mississippi brakeman. Skip grew up close to the Newport Folk Festival, where he heard and saw an amazing array of musicians, including Doc Watson, Bill Monroe, Maybelle Carter, Eck Robertson, Mississippi John Hurt, and the Stanley Brothers, just to begin a very long list. Bluegrass Unlimited magazine referred to Skip as, quote, the finest exponent today of the style of mandolin that was performed by the Monroe brothers. As a mandolinist, I must add, that style is the bedrock of most American mandolin styles today. Skip's three recordings of cowboy songs on Rounder Records were hailed by Scott Alaric of the Boston Globe as, quote, the most flat-out gorgeous cowboy albums to lope down the trail in years. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Annie Prue writes, quote, the lonesome ache that is in the core of Skip Gorman's voice and fiddling fits close to the bones of the high plains. These traditional cowboy songs, unadorned, openly sad, lively, or gritty, carry the distance and solitude of the West. My friends, the strongest praise I could give for any musician involved in traditional styles would be to say that someone has become a bearer of tradition, of musical tradition. Rather than being just a participant in the music or an interpreter, a tradition bearer gives us a direct link to understanding our culture through its musical traditions. Skip Gorman has truly earned that type of recognition, and it is with my most sincere admiration that I present to you today Skip Gorman and Gordon Peary.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, I think we need to loosen up, Gordon, don't we?
Yeah.
After all that praise that I don't think I really deserved, we've got to do something now.
You must be 120 years old, Skip.
Well, I'm just totally honored, and I'm honored to be here with Gordon Peery, a old buddy who's done so much good work in this vicinity with the Monadnock Center and with dancing. And this area of New Hampshire is truly a hotbed of dance and music. When you think about it, Harrisville, Nelson, Peterborough, it really is the epicenter in many ways of contra dance music in this country. At least I've become to think that's the case. That tune we just played was a polka, and very often dances, contra dances, are begun with polkas. I learned that polka many years ago off a recording of Winston Scotty Fitzgerald, who is a famous Cape Breton fiddle player, and somebody to be revered. He was really the Bill Monroe or the Seamus Ennis of Cape Breton fiddle playing, one of the first to do serious recordings. So it's a joy to be here. Now we need to loosen up a little, Gordon.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, if we were really going to give you what the program has been promoted, you know, the sort of the origins and influence of New England contra dance music, we'd be here for at least a week. And so what we're going to do instead is just we'll play a few tunes and talk a little bit about them. And as August mentioned, we'd be happy if people have questions to discuss them. There are no answers, really, but we'd be happy to discuss them at the reception. Musicians don't like to talk on an empty stomach, so we'll be back there having food, and you can join us. But we hope that by the end of the program we'll have shed a little bit of light on you know, the different flavors of tunes, where they come from, and so forth. As Skip said, oftentimes an evening of contra dancing will start with a polka, and in fact that particular tune can often be heard on Nelson, in Nelson on a Monday night at the beginning of the evening. And then at the end of the night there's a waltz, and in between almost entirely the tunes are either jigs or reels. And the reels are a 2-4-4-4 time, sort of a, you know, a downbeat, offbeat, oompa kind of thing. And the jigs are in 6-8 time, so it's sort of jiggity, 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 jig kind of flavor. And you can hear the difference, but not everyone is really aware of that. So the most important thing for the piano player is to know whether it's a jig or a reel, so we know sort of what tempo to work with, and then also what key we're playing in. So if we were at a dance right now, Skip would say, okay, Gordon, we're going to play a set of jigs in starting in G, and then the second one is in A. And I wouldn't care what the name was. All I needed was to know if it was a jig and what key we're in. So, but you can talk about the name here.
Oh, okay. Well, before we did that, we'd have to defer to the caller to see what he or she would like to do. Isn't that right, Lisa? Right. I wouldn't make that decision on my own. I wouldn't dare do that. This is a set of jigs that go way back. Actually, I learned these from Roddy and Randy Miller, two of my favorite players on the planet. And they did some beautiful recordings in the 1970s together. And they did one called the Cowboy Jig, which, of course, because I sing cowboy songs, I glommed onto. And I think they probably took it out of Cole's 1001 Fiddle Tunes. And the second jig in this medley is one called Off She Goes, which is a common old-time New England dance, I think. So... Thank you. Surreals?
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that a coyote? Those were two very popular jigs here. I just love the way the Millers played that. And, you know, there were so many wonderful fiddlers and flute players and accordion players. And, for instance, like Allison and Hunt, who just started off the program here tonight. And there are just so many callers. It really is. They're all over the bushes here, Gordon, down here. It's just wonderful. And if I started naming names, I'd leave someone out and I'd feel badly. But of course, you know, the old guard, people like Dudley Laufman and Bob McQuillan and Harvey Tolman, and then, you know, the intermediary people in their 50s and 60s now, you know, people like Deanna Stiles and the whole Orsachowski family and, you know, Roger Treat. There's so many people. And then, of course, you're more familiar with the younger set than I am, because you're a younger guy.
Well, naturally.
So I just thought I'd name a few names. I think we're going to play a set of reels now, right? Is that right?
Well, that's what I have.
Okay.
So
a set of reels that actually come from the Shetland Islands. And Shetland Islands, as most of you know, are off of Scotland, way north of Scotland, and up close to Norway, actually, and it's influenced by Norwegian music, the music there. And Gordon and I played that festival when? About 1991 with Rod and Randy Miller, and it was quite an experience. And in the late 60s, I remember living in Rhode Island, and a fellow named Ali Bain came from the Shetland Islands, and with a guitar player named Mike Wayans. This is before the Boys of the Lock. And he played some beautiful tunes, and I was really impressed. So we're going to do a couple of reel sets from the Shetland Islands. First one's called Herlocks. Second one is the Milbrae. And I think one or both of these were written by a fellow named Ronnie Cooper. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, I'd like to talk about four-wheel drive trucks. And I'm not talking about like your all-wheel drive Subarus or those things that we have nowadays. I'm talking about real trucks here.
That's a Vermont
car.
Dodge
Power Wagons and so forth.
Subaru is a Vermont car. Gordon.
So many people don't realize this, but the way a true four-wheel drive truck is constructed is the front wheels are actually turning when you're engaged in four-wheel drive. The front wheels are turning just slightly faster than the back wheels, and the reason for that is that it has to, it has to have some pulling power to really utilize that four-wheel drive capacity and get you out of tricky situations. And so, and this is why you're not supposed to drive four-wheel drive trucks on dry pavement, because it kind of stresses out the mechanics. Whereas if it's slippery, it just sort of takes care of itself. And so I think of that when I think about how the contradance piano is supposed to be played. Because if you're playing for a dance, what you need to do is have it be that it sounds like you're getting faster all the time without actually getting faster. So somehow, the front and the back of the truck continue moving at the same speed, even though the front wheels are turning slightly faster. And when you're playing for a dance, the same thing applies, that you've got to give the feeling that you're in advance of what's happening, but actually not be. The same is true, actually, for a good bluegrass band. A good bluegrass bass player is going to be ahead of the beat, whereas jazz, your jazz bass wants to be sort of maybe a little bit behind to give that sort of laid-back feeling about it. And so I have a feeling, actually, this is why Nelson is such a hotbed of contradance music, because to live in Nelson, you have to have four-wheel drive. So it must be influencing somehow.
There's a connection.
So, but the truth is there aren't really any rules about playing contradance piano. You know, the tunes have kind of passed down this tradition, and there's different embellishments that you might have for an Irish tune than a Scottish tune and so forth. The piano doesn't feature prominently in the very early music of this country, in this region. And it's actually hard to find information about it, until you start listening to someone like Bob McQuillan, who would talk about his mentor, Johnny Trombley. But there are no rules, there's no music written, and in fact, a lot of the earlier tune books don't even have chords. They just have the melodies, and the piano players are supposed to figure it out. So our job as accompanists is to figure out, both the tempo thing that I've already mentioned, but also how to voice the chords, how to give kind of an enhanced flavor behind the tune. And there are no rules. Sometimes you can play a tune one way, and the next time through use very different chords or very different voicings. So one of the ways that we learn about this is actually to play the tunes more slowly, or oftentimes, as we're about to play a lovely air, which is a very slow tune. And there's no reason to play an air at a contradance; people would leave. But we get a chance to do this in situations like this. So Skip will tell you a little bit about this tune that we're about to play.
This is a tune that I fell in love with recently. I spent last month in Scotland, and I got a chance to sail to the Isle of Mull with some good friends of mine. And all these friends came from a little town on the east coast in Aberdeenshire called Auchinblay. And I had just learned this beautiful air, and none of them knew the air. So I can say that I sat in the hold of a ship and played this one Sunday morning. And not classically trained. I've never been classically trained, which I regret somewhat, but I'll keep working on this number for the rest of my life. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you. you, Gordon. Well, these two tunes are quintessentially New England tunes to me. The first one is called Betch Elders, and such a New England name. There was a violin maker in Frankfort, Maine, two violin makers. There was Alva and Edwin Betch Elder, and very good violin makers. And actually, their violins are becoming quite prized now by certain people. And then I realized that there's a nice New England tune called Betch Elders. And so I learned that, and gosh, the second one is called Frenchies, because there's a big French-Canadian influence in contradance music. And these are played quite often, and I look out in the crowd here and I see some faces, people like Sarah Bowen, who play these tunes really well. So we'll do these for you.
When you first start hearing this music and even playing it, it takes a little while to figure out, you know, what might be a Scottish tune or an Irish tune or French-Canadian. And a New England tune, which is kind of, you know, ultimately a composite of those things. But there are definitely tunes, both traditional tunes and more recently composed tunes, that you just listen to and you know that's about New England. It just somehow invokes images of our homes, our barns, our fields, and woods, and so forth, and you just know that it's about here. And so these are two tunes that, well, I won't say they're recently composed, but they're composed within Skip's lifetime because he wrote them. And and the first one was a tune that I heard many, many years ago. It was recorded on this thing that was about this big around, that you'd put on a disc and it would spin around like this. And so I first heard it in that context. It's a wonderful jig called Up to New Hampshire. And it really actually speaks to me because Skip and I each at earlier times of our lives lived in Connecticut. And if you have to leave anywhere, Connecticut's a good place to leave from. I hope I
Absolutely.
Haven't offended anyone here. And if you have to go somewhere, New Hampshire's a great place to go too. So the first tune is called Up to New Hampshire. And the second tune, I think Skip wrote about his home up in Grafton. It's called The Old Cellar Hole.
Right. Yes. That's it. And I do have fond memories of coming up here. I was teaching at a private school in New York State, and this would have been about 1978 or 9, and I would come up here and stay with my good buddy Kenny Siegel. And we would go to the dances and listen to Roddy and Randy, and it was just great. So, you know, I just have this feeling for New Hampshire, now that I've lived here for 30 years, and my ancestors were from here. So we'll do Up to New Hampshire. I spent a lot of time in Ireland recently. I discovered my great-great-grandfather's homestead on the very tip of Donegal in a place called Ballygorman. And so I've been loving the Irish music, and it's such a big part of contra dance music. And it's the Celtic music is where the New England contra dance music comes from. And there are a group of islands called the Aran Islands off of Galway Bay. And there's one called Inishir, the one closest to the mainland. And there's an absolutely beautiful tune called Inishir. And I love the way Gordon plays this. And so we kind of glommed onto it. And we'd like to play it for you. Thank you. you, Gordon.
Get on it. Okay.
The Battle of Aughrim, 1691. It was the decisive battle of the Willamite Wars, when William of Orange came and subjugated the Irish people. It's in County Galway, Aughrim. And we're going to do the Battle of Aughrim as a march. And very often at contradances you have marches done. So this is a good example, I think. Nice little jig that wa-daddle-dee-dum-ba-day-dee-daddle-da-daddle-dee-dum.
Well, that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
What sort of, you see, in Ireland, nobody knows the names of any of these tunes. If you mention, if you're at a session and someone mentions the name, I don't know the name of the tune. I just know it goes like this.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what key is this in?
It's in the key of D. You do need to know that, I guess.
Okay. DJ, before we get into that, I did want to just say for the last tune that we played, which we played as a march, mm-hmm. and you could, it did sound like sort of a battle that maybe hadn't gone that well. But it could also, that same tune, just picked up a little bit in tempo, could also be used as a polka for a dance, and oftentimes would be, and it would sound much more sprightly and somewhat more cheerful. So just a slight variation in the speed can really make a difference. So we'll play this set of jigs
now. And then we'll
do
the McQuillan's.
That we don't know the name of, right?
Yeah, and then after that we'll do the McQuillan tune.
Yeah, okay. Here we go.
Well, I just wanted to thank August and thank Nancy and the people involved.
Thank you, August.
Much too kind. That's a very personal thanks. Okay, here we go. Whatever the name of this tune is, we hope you like it. Thank you.
Skip, let's actually do one more because we still, I don't know if we've started to play faster. The piano player hasn't been picking up speed, has he? So
I tried to play that one quickly.
Yeah, because, you know, when they put this on the radio, the only solution they'll have is to make the tunes go slower, and then it puts them down in pitch, and it'll sound weird and so forth. So maybe another quick reel or something before our...
Okay, how about John Brennan's then?
Yeah, okay, and just that or the other...
In the key of D.
Yeah, okay.
This one actually has a name.
John Brennan's. Yeah, so we're going to talk about Bob McQuillan, and that could be a long story. And I don't know that there's anyone in this room who really would need an introduction to Bob. If you do, come see us afterwards. We had a wonderful experience here a couple of years. I was very honored to be a part of when we were honoring Bob for his contribution to life, really. I mean, it wasn't just... you know, music and teaching and all those things. He was an incredible, powerful influence on so many, many people, musicians, dancers, and students at Conval who he taught. He was a force, and I use the past tense sort of loosely because I'm not aware that he's gone very far away. He passed away. A year ago, last February, I think it was, but I don't feel I miss him, but I don't really feel his absence. He brought so much to the music, including the composition of close to a couple thousand tunes, and I know that there are many people in this room who he wrote tunes for and named them after him. And
I think he's helping us today. I know he's helping me, and I can hear his laugh.
Yeah, he's around. He was a piano player, accordion player, and so for those of us who are piano players, he may have had some special influence, but he was just a force, and so we're going to close today's program. With a couple of tunes that he wrote, and which Skip and I actually recorded, so we'll do a short commercial announcement here. One of the CDs that's available out back is called Halloween Hornpipe, and we recorded this set of tunes on that. The first is probably known to most people in this room. It's by far his best known piece called Amelia, that was written. I don't know, Sarah. When was that written? In the late 70s, maybe. It was a long time ago anyway, and it's gotten played all over the world. I was in a small town in Germany once, and the band played it, and I sent Bob a postcard, and said, we played your waltz Amelia about two blocks down from the house where there was this plaque saying this is where Beethoven wrote his Ninth Symphony, and he got a kick out of that. It's just a lovely piece of music, And then the second piece is called Another Margaret's Waltz. And Skip, you may want to add something to...
Always remember Bob with the second piece saying that you couldn't play two A's and two B's. You had to play one A and one B. And I never questioned him. I just did what he said.
Yeah.
And if you ever tried to tell Bob to play a chord on the piano, just play the blank thing. It was his response.
So anyway, thank you all for coming out. It's wonderful to see so many people here, so many familiar faces. There are some lovely refreshments in the back here afterwards, and Skip and I will be there, and we'd be happy to visit with you. And if you have any specific questions, we'll just answer back with another question and keep the conversation going.
Thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
A very special thanks to Skip and to Gordon for being here today, and to you for coming to the Mennonite Summer Lyceum. You've been listening to the Mennonite Summer Lyceum on New Hampshire Public Radio. The Mennonite Summer Lyceum presents a weekly series of lectures held at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Peterborough, New Hampshire. For more information about the Lyceum, you can visit our website at mennoniclyceum.org. The program next Sunday is our final program of the season. It will feature Keith McGee of Boston University speaking on race in America. We hope to see you all there.